And as the dulcet tones of our intro song, Future Librarian, fade away, all that's left for me to say right now is welcome to Future Library with your host, Alex Botton. I've not done that before. I always just assume people know who I am. Sat next to me today is Kat. Hello, Kat.
Hello.
Sat on Kat's lap is Sky the cat. Hello, Sky.
Who's making a lot of noise.
Yeah, and below Sky is Alty, the other cat. So you'll probably hear noise of cats around in the background as... Sky's not very happy with Alty because Alty's new and Sky's growling a lot. And Alty's just kind of pounding around the room trying to climb up things. There you go, there's a bit of a growl. We do have a guest, which I've done it again every single week. I say we do have a guest, but there wouldn't be a show if I didn't have a guest. Again, I'm going to do the utterly redundant thing that I always do as well. Because if you've downloaded the podcast or you're listening to it online, you know who the guest is because the title of the podcast is the guest's name. But I'm still going to tease the guest here. He's got a long, illustrious career with many, many acts. He's been in Greenthink, he's been in Deep Puddle Dynamics, Themselves, he's worked with Boom Bip. He's been in Object Beings, for listeners who are wondering, I am reading this off Wikipedia, in Cloud Dead. He's worked with The Knot Twist in 13 and God, Subtle, and Solo, and a list of collaborations longer than practically any other list on the internet. We're joined by Mr. Dose One. Hello.
Hello. Hi, Alex. Hi, Kat and the cats.
All the way from Oakland, California? Is that where you are at the
moment? Yes, sunny Oakland, where winter is a fig. It's Santa Claus. It doesn't exist.
It's, well, from what I've seen of the news from over there, it's been a bit of a drought, I believe.
Yeah, you know, I'm ecologically retarded. I mean, my shower runs. I hear there's a drought. We had rain last week, but in general, it's just been like full-on global warming, perfect winter, wear a sweater, and you're good. I can't complain.
Here, it's just been really wet.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah, we're getting, like, all of our Midwest, all my buddies in Minneapolis, it's, like, -4, and it's still snowing. It sucks.
Yeah, the polar vortex.
Yeah, I can't. I think snow is great in pictures. I'm fond of remembering it, but whatever to it.
I lived in Minneapolis for 9 years, so yes, I'm familiar with snow.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was sitting with somebody the other day, and we were, because we could... do it lightheartedly, just laughing about how much it sucks to get a car out of snow when you're late already.
It reminds me of something we saw that we could never quite understand what had happened. In Minneapolis a few winters ago, we were driving around, and on, you know those big kind of snow banks at the side of the road when they've pushed all the snow off?
Yeah, yeah.
There was a car perched on top of it. It's like, and both Kat and I just looked at it and we were like, how's that happened?
Well, because like, it sort of melted around it, so it was like this mountain with a car on top.
Yeah.
It was very strange.
Oh, wow.
It was just like, imagine a triangle with just a car resting on the apex.
Maybe they, some kind of enlarging ray, they shot the snow below the car and it grew. That's what I'm envisioning.
Or maybe it was a toy car that they put on the top and shot the...
Shot that with the reeling ray.
Maybe it was both.
The detoyifier. Actually, I would fucking love to have a gun that turns people into toys.
And vice versa?
I think that was a Doctor Who story.
Then you could just snap their head off or some shit and walk the fuck away.
Are there people... I think Kat and I have had that situation walking through like a busy shopping mall where people are getting in the way, and I've kind of said that I would really like to be able to just tap them on the shoulder and send them instantly home so they're out of the way.
Right.
And but not with their cars or anything. Their cars are still at the mall.
Yeah.
So they can't fucking get back.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I see.
But it'd be too easy to be going, poof, 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 poof. Yeah. Mall of America, poof, 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 poof. Get out of my way.
I remember once saying this to somebody I worked with, though, and she said she'd just tap them and she'd just send them to oblivion.
Well, that's what I'm picturing, that really unbearable Pirates of the Caribbean 2 scene where it's just what's-his-face alone in the white green screen.
Yeah.
Just so that's where I see you sending all these people in the mall, is, and then they're there in this sort of like, you know, no D backdrop, trying to get phone reception and being like, what the? I was just in the fucking. Where was I?
I've got no bars. Have you got bars? I've got no bars.
It's all white here. A bunch of white people in a white nether.
In their white clothes. Pure white outfits. But the same clothes that they were wearing. But they're just right. Pure white.
And that would be very confusing.
And they've all got their shopping, and it's still in the bags, but it's all white.
Oh, wow.
Like white oranges.
Now that's really complicated. Just teleporting people magically to the netherworld seems easy and doable. But if we're going to have all their belongings and clothing, it really seems hard.
You're just an orange racist.
I'm an orange racist. Those oranges. I don't trust their kind of the peely stuff that you have to peel off them.
The peel?
The peel, yeah.
You have to peel off them.
Yeah, I don't trust.
It's so defensive. Yeah, I can't just be fruit.
It's like the submarine of fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, it's like a submarine. I don't know why, but that's what I've always felt. Cat's looking at me as if I've gone mad. Just shake as if.
Cats and fruit.
Yeah, cats and fruit. Let's see where to start with such a illustrious and long career. I'm almost at a loss to know where to begin.
Where I want to begin is whether or not Dos One remembers taking a picture with you, because there's a picture of you two together.
And actually, I will remind you of this, because this is another one of my moments of kind of embarrassment for the podcast. I came and saw you guys play in Birmingham in the UK on the For Hero For Fool tour.
Oh,
and I spoke to you briefly at the merch table, and I asked you if you had any themselves records. And you said, no, but I do have my solo record, and we do have Gel's solo record. And I said, oh, and thinking I was being funny, I said, oh, if you played them together at the same time, would that make a themselves record? And you just looked at me and went, no. And I was like, oh.
Failed.
That was my joke, and it failed.
Sometimes I love when people start telling me a story that starts with the one time I met you, and then I get to wait to see if I was an asshole or funny or generous or what. It's always great.
No,
you know, like tour, you some days, and especially when reality manifests itself and the length of a tour is when you're at the merch booth and you're sitting there, and like you'll either be full of patience or the exact opposite. And it's pretty funny. I'm glad I was just... I didn't say anything. No,
you're really polite. I think you just looked like, what's he talking about?
You know? I was explaining the facts to you about how records work.
Yeah, it's like, no, that's not how... That's not really how they work.
Yeah, vinyl doesn't work that way. I wish it did.
And then my other kind of encounter was via when... I think it was when you guys had some stuff stolen in Spain. I'm not going to say I stole a load of stuff from the band shuttle.
No. It was you!
Because I know there was that appeal to kind of help get some funds raised, so I sent off a picture to get a portrait done. Oh, that's a cat hissing there.
What did I paint you as?
It was brilliant, because the picture I'd sent you, at the time my hair was kind of sort of a bit of a kind of mop on the top of my head and glasses, and I was wearing a scarf and stuff. So my two defining features, though, were glasses and the hair, and the portrait has everything but the glasses and the hair. And I thought that was genius.
Which we can't find it, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's somewhere in the house. We moved house and it's somewhere in the house, because it used to be on our bedroom wall. Because
what's funny is I that time was so fucking shitty. I really remember all those. And when I see them, I actually remember the pictures really vividly. It's been pretty interesting what that was definitely not one of the coolest, I guess, how that circumstance came to be. Not so cool, but painting all the people that gave a shit about our music was actually pretty awesome, I gotta say.
Yeah, it's nice when the fans reach out and say, here we go, not only do we like your music, we will help you to continue to make it.
I think it depends on the circumstances in which your fans are reaching out. You don't just, you know, want them to grope you and be like, have some money.
No, that's a different thing.
I loathe that. And when I hear things like people like, that begging, that it's like a begging of privilege. It's like, I know you want to give me money because you like how I dress. Whatever that energy is like deplorable. So it was I also thought it was kind of cool to I really felt we had no choice but to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, at the end of the day, felt like it was really nice to paint everyone. If I had to ask for money, that's about as nice as you can get that thing to be without it feeling like I owed everyone $10,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Which is not how you want to feel after getting robbed. Either. It's like, oh yeah, now I owe everybody who likes us. So it was, it was interesting.
Yeah, it was a very cool thing. So I'm hoping I find it. I'm sure it must be somewhere in the house.
I hope so.
Somewhere between a book page.
But we moved in September, and we only just found the remotes for the Apple TV last week.
They were in my makeup bag. Impressive. I don't know why.
So yeah, they were in your makeup bag. Don't know why.
Yeah, in one that you'd squirreled away on a shelf. Wow. I found it in here with your 7 inches.
Wow.
In a makeup bag.
And it was an old school white Apple remote for my old MacBook plus the new Apple TV remote.
I love both in there. The part that you're doing hand gestures as if.
Yeah, I'm doing hand gestures to show the sizes
so
of
it. So I can see them.
Yeah.
I can hear them.
In the audio. Yeah, if I whoosh my hands fast enough.
So most hand gestures I can't hear, but when it's a remote or something like that, I can hear exactly what you're describing with your hands.
Anything smaller, and it's no hope. Anything even a millimeter bigger, not a chance. But when it's exactly the right size.
Were it a shoe, I would be very confused. But I can see the remote.
Yeah. Yeah, you see. That's it. And my parents bought me a replacement for Christmas, and then weeks later we found them.
Oh, man, my parents don't buy me shit.
Mine don't either, if that counts.
What is going on? Alex, you got good parents.
To be fair, he does.
They have been very good. Yeah.
They actually were cat-sitting the new kitten because he's been quite sick.
Oh, what has he got?
He has cat flu.
Oh, no.
And his eyes were all gummed up and he couldn't open them. And, of course, if we had to go off to work, I didn't want to leave him blind for 8 hours a day. So my in-laws decided they were going to cat-sit.
Oh, wow, he's really goopy. Oh, man, that's heavy.
But
he's all right now. He's had a week with my parents. My parents had loads of cats. You see, they've had Siamese cats for 30 years.
Cappy.
Yeah, their cats. They could have got old and died, so they hadn't had any cats for a couple of years. So I think it's kind of nice for them to have a kitten around.
I trust cat people implicitly.
Yeah,
and that does not always work. I might say you can't actually trust any kind of person implicitly. You know, I got a coffee, and two really fit people came out of the gym, and I mean personal trainer fit, all their abdomen is present at all times, and I was looking at them, and I was like, you know, I hold it back, actually acknowledging the thought, but every time I see someone who's incredibly fit, I really deeply assume they're a douchebag, and I wouldn't get along with them. And I'm just going to say it because I don't really... I just realized today that I know we would not be good friends. Were we, like, stuck in an elevator for 8 hours, I would be very happy to never see them again. Whereas if I look at... And then I started thinking about if you gave me, like, a very unfit person, very slovenly, no musculature whatsoever visible, and an extremely fit person, I think I could say without doubt I would like the unfit person or the fit person. Maybe I'm just making all that up, but there's something about being incredibly fit that it's like if I saw you in a Nazi uniform, I'd be like, no, I don't think we'd be friends. And if I see you like rippling coming from the gym and going to the gym, and do those people work? That's the other thing I think when I see gym people.
Well, I was literally about to say, just before you said the Nazi thing, I was going to say, let's face it, most of them are Nazis. But you beat me too.
And if the Nazis, they don't have to work. They just, like, get money from the government.
Yeah, from the Nazi government.
I think there's a Nazi branch of every government, and they privately fund all these fit people.
The guys, yeah, you do kind of wonder where, because... Yeah, they show up on British TV occasionally. Sort of, you know, they've got to go, you know, Johnny Smith here likes to go to the gym 7 days a week. It's like, what? How does he spend?
I like the ones that are so fit that their neck is slowly getting bigger than their head.
Yeah, like a triangle.
And I don't know what that thing is, like where they're really fit. I just like, what could you possibly laugh? Do they laugh? Do people that fit laugh or like stare at the wall? I see them in my, like, everything turns off in me, but then at the same time, I love to think about their life. I'm like, what is going on in your life?
I see your point. It's a mystery.
Well, I've seen some people who get super into bodybuilding and stuff, and they hit the point where they can't even, like, properly bring their knees together because their thighs are so big.
Right.
But they've got, like, these tiny, weird little girl knees. It's very bizarre.
So I bet, too, the same thing for very obese people, and when you work out, you have trouble finding your penis at a point.
Yes. Probably, yeah.
I think that's...
You lose track of, like, the good stuff that you can't work out, you know? So you got to be aware. I guess that's one of the trappings of working out all the stuff you can work out. There's some stuff like your tongue and your penis and your eyeballs. They're just never going to get any bigger.
They get smaller and smaller. The stuff around them.
Soon be the most muscular man dwarfing his own penis size. Yeah. It's heavy.
With no eyes and a tiny, tiny tongue.
What if eyes shrunk?
She got older. So they got smaller and smaller.
Kind of like how old man's ears and noses just get bigger. Their eyes just get smaller.
So you should have a couple things that shrink, like maybe fingers. I'm going to go there. I saw a midget jogging today, and that was interesting.
A midget jogging?
Yeah, I don't see. I don't think I've actually seen that.
Was in the full jogging outfit, or?
Yeah, it was that? They were absolutely. They were a jogger. They had like. You know, since you're in England, they had trainers, nice, expensive trainers specifically for running, and a whole outfit. So, but it was interesting. I just don't think I've actually ever seen, and I don't jog, so I felt,
I can't jog.
Ugh, I hate it. I don't understand.
I tried doing the couch to 5K thing a little while ago.
And realized you hated running.
Yeah, yeah. I went out and I said to Kat, right, I'm going out. I'm going to start it today. So I kind of put the little kind of thing on my iPod and got ready to go. And off I ran. And I was back about 5 minutes later.
Yeah, I fucking hate this.
Yeah, I kind of came back in and I was like, I hate jogging.
Me too. I start to judge everyone else who's jogging and resenting just because I don't like it. It really puts me at my worst, and I don't know. I don't know what to do, and I don't like. I feel like it's a waste, and then it is a labor. I don't know what is going. My body hates it though. I like lifting weights, and I like various sport things. So, for instance, I loved tag when I was little. But jogging in a circle is like the bane of my existence.
Yeah. Well, I've got a colleague who runs. She does like half marathons. She sits next to me at work. And she was saying the other day that running is like, she said, you get this runner's high. She said it's a bit like, she's had it described to her as being a bit like taking heroin. And I said, so you get a high and it's like taking heroin. So if I just took heroin, I could skip straight to the high.
Well, there's a lot of things that I find really disturbing about running. The number one, at least for blokes, is the fact that your nipples start to bleed an awful lot.
Oh, man.
Chafing. Yeah, chafing is a real thing, man.
Yeah.
You have to put, like, little pasties over your man.
That depends. That depends on your nippleature as a man. Some people have tougher skin than others. Not everybody bleeds through the titty. Not all men. No.
The real man's man doesn't.
Another reason to never get into super weightlifting was I saw one of these... deeply disturbing things in which a guy burst a blood vessel through his leg while he was doing lifts, and literally just suddenly blood from his tiny hole just starts pouring out of his leg because he's burst a vein.
Do you think they get kind of really pressury inside?
Probably, but he was jogging on like a treadmill and suddenly like arterial blood starts spurting out his leg.
I always assumed that those muscle guys were kind of, you know, pumped up with muscle, but it sounds to me that they're maybe just full of blood.
They pop
you guys, have you guys ever been to, like, a Vancouver or a town that has, like, a heroin neighborhood where everyone's actually on heroin? So after you said that, I'm picturing, like, a marathon, like when those Boston, a marathon ends and all those people are there and they're all, like, smacked out, though. You know, So, like, if it literally were a heroin high that you acquire after running a lot, so then they'd be completely uncoordinated with their pants half down, kind of sitting everywhere, stumbling, I think they describe that incorrectly. It cannot be the equivalent of a heroin high. Because I've never seen a runner act like a heroin addict after. Yeah. I think heroin, I'm just trying to say, I've never tried heroin. I think they're overvaluing the running high.
Yeah.
I think heroin is probably a way more quality debilitating high than the running high.
I can imagine if my colleague took heroin, she'd probably say afterwards, yeah, that's nothing like running.
Right, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. So like, I would compare to, have you ever had like a day where you do a really good cleaning of your apartment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet the running high is more like that than it's like smack. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Just kind of getting into the zone.
I'm a good me, you know?
Could it be maybe a bit like the day when you wake up and you go to work and you realize you have the day off? Could it be that kind of high?
Or when you're really late high. I get really high when I'm late. It's like a confusion.
Is that why you're late? Because you've gotten really high.
Oh, is that what's going on?
Wrong way around.
I gotta film my life. I need game tape of my life so I can correctly assess. So that's my biggest trouble in life is one, describing the high I get from things correctly, and then figuring out if it was a high I got from a thing or another high that preceded thing.
Of course, the thing to then happen.
That was like, wow, these eggs got me as high as running. And then I have to be like, wait a minute.
I just ran.
What happened?
Or was that heroin? And were there actually no eggs?
Nobody describes an egg high.
Yeah, man, I had these eggs this morning. Fuck me, I was so high after them.
Still, these eggs. Just sitting there, you take a bite of eggs, and then it's 40 minutes later.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there at the breakfast table. Everything's cold, and you love it, and it's your favorite.
And all your family's left for work. And the phone.
And then eventually, everyone is like, you're always wanting breakfast, no matter what time it is, and everyone knows you're addicted to eggs.
This is an intervention.
And then you're always talking months into your egg addiction. You're like, bringing up, what do you think a chicken would like it here? Like, then it just goes to chickens, because you're going to eventually want to cut off the middleman and go straight to the supplier. So,
they're going to find you at 3 in the morning squeezing hens.
And trying to, yelling at them to make more eggs fast. Like in cartoons, you know, when they're like, another egg! And then it's... Yeah, right. So I don't think that... But I can see these guys, the egg high would definitely have you, like, staring at a chicken... Waiting for its bowels to move, or whatever makes an egg in a chicken. I'm not quite sure.
I'm pretty sure they don't shit out eggs.
Are you sure? I'm pretty sure the chicken is a two-hole construction.
Mouth and ass?
Yeah. I think that's how they work.
It is. Like, it's a cloaca, but yeah.
Have you seen a rubber chicken? That's pretty much the deal.
Yeah, that's how chickens work.
Do they make rubber eggs?
Rubber chickens?
Yeah.
They do, but it's so slow.
I've tasted rubber eggs on, like, airplanes when they give you a little bit of egg.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So I've just kind of got this mental image now of the thing that first gets the guy interested in thinking about the chicken, is that he's eating the egg, and he's on his egg high, and he looks up, and there's a Kellogg's cornflakes box in front of him with that kind of, you know, stylized rooster on it. And he's just kind of looking at it, calculating, going, yeah, I could get me some fine chicken action.
Right, and he is addicted. See, you're making me... So that made me realize, why the fuck is that rooster on that goddamn box? And it's not because chicken is behind breakfast. It's because he's mourning. He's signifying waking up, right, in the morning with the cock-a-doodle-doo. Yeah. So what's going on with chickens in the morning, man? Chickens are fucking embedded deeply. Eggs seriously tied to mourning. We've really done it. Humans. Is there another animal that's so... Cows, are they tied to dinner? Lunch? That's like the most heavily...
Chicken and bread. Yeah. The chicken and the rooster is the breakfast, isn't it? It's like the Walter White of eggs.
maybe bats at night. We tie bats to night, but that's a lot of... And cats get a little bit of night association. But this is all positive. Usually when you associate an animal with something, it's like ominous. But this chickens make out, man.
Yeah.
It's all positive press regarding mornings, chickens, and eggs.
These tiny little dinosaur dudes.
So, in theory, does one does music?
I guess so.
Did you probably come back to music instead of chickens and eggs?
Yeah, I did a ton of music. I've been really enjoying. To make a long story short, but still have a point. I did all those groups you described. I did them very freely, and I followed not a career path but a people path. I just kind of have a little shitty compass inside me or a barometer that's like, that person, I think I'm supposed to do something with them. And it went really well, and I made all this beautiful art that has defined me both as a person and a worker in the world of art, but no money. It's really kind of depressing and heavy. Some of the labels I was on don't pay royalties. Some of the things I was on ended up costing more than they made. And then there's just the state of the industry, yada, yada. So I've spent the last couple of years not letting that cripple me or make me bitter or do whatever or completely poor. So I've been working on all kinds of things and opening up and not just cutting albums and touring up their ass twice a year, which also to me became kind of strict in a weird way. Like the first music I came from all these years I was alive, and then I made a record and that was very fulfilling. And then I have 6 months, I hope I go through a bunch of shit, this regimen. It's not the gym. Making albums is absolutely not the gym. You should not go every day in that way. So it's cool. I'm in a space where I'm actually returning to where I was. I took some pressure off of making the record I make all my money for the year. And so now I make all kinds of music. I do film music and video game music and my own music, which I just let sit and I don't have to give it to people, and it feels awesome. I feel rich.
Well, we regularly download the free ringtone of the
Fantastic. You know what? I was about to, when I remembered you were calling, I was about to start this month, and I had an epiphany in bed the other day. I want to do a couple alarms because those alarms on all the phones are so fucking cheesy.
Yeah,
I'm going to do a bunch that are absolutely intense. I have a bunch of great ideas. I can't wait.
Well, the one that I have from when my mum rings is the is to get the fucking phone. Get the fucking phone.
You never answer when I call.
Yeah, because she's always complaining that I've never answered the phone.
So. I know. My grandma passed away this year, and I made that as a sort of funny, honest, loving homage to her. And that is her. That is my version of her voice.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, and you've done the Samurai Gun music as well for the game.
Yeah, man. That Bo and Max are amazing, and I love. So I've met a lot of other suns and moons and co-planets when I made music, and we collaborated in very different ways. And what I'm loving about working with the indie game community is everyone is really just like me and in a completely different dynamic skill and creative set sort of way. But they are very self-motivated. They do everything. They overwork and enjoy it, and great things happen because of it. So it's kind of like just meeting a bunch of soulmates in the aesthetic and dedication department. So it's been really cool. So working with these guys has been awesome. I did the Samurai Gun music, and I'm working on some stuff I actually would get in trouble if I announced right now, but a lot of cool other stuff, and I love it. These guys are really creative.
Is it the Egg soundtrack?
It's the Egg inside you. Yeah, I'm doing the music for
the Egg inside you.
For all fetal goings on everywhere.
Across all species.
All fetus. Yeah. Womb 2, The Reckoning. So I have a...
No, it's Womb 2, Electric Boogaloo. It's always Electric Boogaloo.
There's only womb enough for me.
Womb with a view.
Is that the third album?
Womb with a view.
room with a few.
Boom, there it is.
God.
How about that shit?
That's... Woom, woom, shake the womb.
Oh, God. And,
boom,
boom, then, shake the womb. You now know he's going to go off and make some weird pregnancy music, right?
I want that to happen.
I kind of am. They're talking about opening a cat cafe in Oakland. And so I actually want to... I'm a little... Sometimes I have these ideas and I really mean well. But I want to make music. I want to donate a soundtrack to the cat cafe. I want to make cat music. A whole record. I don't know what that is. So I'm going to research and keep looking at it and then just make it. I think it's important.
The one that, well, today I was doing stuff because I do music as well as a lot of other things. And today I was mixing something, and it has a lot of kind of I don't know whether we were talking this before we started or not. Fidgety high frequency stuff.
Yeah.
But I found and this is something I just remembered, which makes it relevant. It's kind of like two separate channels, left and right, and they pan very hard, and they're playing slightly different things. So it's always kind of seemingly going back and forth. And I think that's what the cat was liking. There's that sense of movement.
Like chirp. Okay, I like that.
Because the head was going back and forth between the two speakers.
So I'll notice sometimes if I'm doing like a really... when I'm actually creating music in its smallest bone form, and I'm like making some loops, or I'm EQing an abrasive loop... for an extended period of time, I'll look over at my cat and her ears are back and she has the like, motherfucker, if you don't shut that shit off face. And I also notice when I do, do you know like when you're crying and your cat is actually like immediately at your side, sort of confused?
Yeah.
So they always react to it. And I can't tell, I don't think it's because they're necessarily like, oh, my fur will get those tears. I think it's more like, wow, I don't see them like that. That looks weird. I'm going to go sniff that. So, but she, when I do vocals on repeat, when I'm tracking and it's like, all right, and I'm trying to do something, she comes over by me and is totally not sure that I'm okay.
See, I'll admit that I do something that's slightly cruel. I know how to do a kitten mew really well. And I'll do it around other cats, and they go absolutely ballistic. Because they're like, "Where's the kitten? Where's the kitten?" And they're like, trying to dig under you, being like, "Are you sitting on the kitten, you fat bitch? Where is it?"
I think you have to do the impression now, cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even Altie, he's 11 weeks old, is looking around, going, "Where is it?"
I had my cat next to the computer. She didn't fall for it. She thought it was the computer.
Mm. You see, this is the thing. I've noticed this as well, because I was playing back audio of me talking on something else earlier, and Skye just didn't even look at it. She was like, "That's not him." I wonder if cats hear it differently.
Well, the thing is, Altie absolutely loves moving images and sounds and stuff. Skye can't be bothered. She doesn't give a shit.
You know, I will say that I am not sure that I have a final thought on this, but I have thought about it at length for no good reason. I'm never going to get any money for it, but or clarity. But I've always noticed that my cat completely suspends belief where the laser pointer is concerned. So she will feverishly chase the laser projected on the wall. However, she distinctly knows and acknowledges it comes from the keychain. When I pick the keychain up, she knows the laser is going to appear. It's not a critter. She gets over it, she'll like hit the laser. It's very interesting. So she knows it's not alive, but she will chase it like it is. It's very curious. And I wonder about how, because that shows such intelligence to recognize that it's coming from a device. That's incredibly complicated. It's acknowledging technology.
Skye doesn't even fall for the laser pointer. She falls for it for a second if it's on a specific part of the wall. But I will shine the laser pointer. She won't see me pick up the thing. She won't hear it. And she'll immediately turn and look at my hand and then walk away because she's like, bitch, you're playing games with me again.
Right. So that's that thing. So I love that it's like she'll go for it, but she completely understands it. And it's when she stops playing laser, she's like, come on, stupid. I know you make that fucking thing. You know, it's always this like, yeah, I know, bro. And she walks away like a record store employee. Some shit, you know, and I'm always like, oh, okay, cool, smarty. But I don't know you know, and that she is pretty stupid, though, for all the other stuff she doesn't ever figure out.
I bet she can't type or anything like that, you know.
Okay, I'll just if we're going to talk shit, zero English.
Zero English.
Yeah. No math skills. hasn't prepared her own food once. Can't work the sink.
Can't even name one president or a single state.
Nothing. No, yeah, she can't remember. She can't memorize dick.
She can't even name one of her owner's albums.
You know what? I was talking to my stepmom, who's also a cat person. I don't, I'm not like a, money doesn't drive me. I don't like cars. I don't really care about big houses. I like toys and stuff that makes sounds and shit like that. But I was sitting there and it dawned on me that one of the few things I would pay $1 million for, if I had it without thinking, is if they could take my cat and bring it back and it talks.
Oh, that would be good.
I would pay $1 million. My stepmom, too. I would actually, if I had $1 million, I'd
Now, the
it.
Question is if it could talk coherently or if it actually said the shit it was thinking.
I don't care. I would take Tourette's cat. I would take a cat that was just like Bob. Even if it took 20 words over the course of its life, if I had a fucking cat that could look at me and say, Marmalade or Kevin. Or
I like that Kevin.
Doctor's appointment. Or I could teach it dirty words, whatever it's going to do. It would be amazing.
Well, have you seen the animated GIF that's going around of the guy, the deaf guy, who taught his cat basic sign language? And it signs for when it wants to be fed.
It properly signs the actual American Sign Language to
feed. Yeah.
Shitting me. That's beautiful.
No.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
See, the thing is, knowing my luck, though, I'd get a cat that look at, like, walk past and look at Alex and go, "You got weird balls," and that'd be all it would ever say. It'd be the one thing it would say, and it would never speak again.
He'd look at you, do it, sort of kind of smile with its eyes, and go, "Weird balls."
It'd just be done.
Yeah. I should clarify that I don't think I've got weird balls, but if the cat said I did.
Compared to a cat, you know, cats
I guess,
are,
yeah.
Human balls are pretty weird.
I think balls are weird. Nobody's. I don't think that balls aren't like breasts.
No, you don't.
Know, they're not like, everyone's not like, man, those balls. Or like, ah, the balls on him. You know, I don't.
You don't know. They could be.
I think they're just not as cool. It's not like that.
You don't get ball magazines on the top shelf in grocery stores.
There are lots of balls magazines, though. I'm going to play some here. And I'm going to say there's a lot of good stuff for those who enjoy balls. You know, that's... I shouldn't go into it. I do like all that dirty... like, I have never had a significant interest in any of that scat stuff or all the heavy... porno that makes the world go round. But I do love, because, you know, people fucking do, man. Some people like to have sex with an Angry Birds hat on. I'm just saying. You know, like, it could be, it's and sometimes it's funny and cute, I bet, and sometimes it's not. But I love to think about somewhere last night, a couple started the, hey, I think I want to have poop sex dialogue.
Oh, God.
And something. You don't know if they were having cereal and eggs and if it was like the Kellogg's. What? But they're, what I like to think about is like that they're, you know, they're, the one person's like, you know, sometimes when you fart in bed, it's so funny. And then the other one's like, yeah, it's pretty funny. And then eventually one of them is honest and then they're fucking, and that relationship either ends that night or
goes to a whole new level. So really,
and then I don't know. People, that's the other thing, too, is you have to realize that for every recovering alcoholic or full-blown alcoholic who's dealing with it, and I'm not comparing poop sex to the disease of alcoholism and how hard it is on people, but people are living that life, man. They do it all the time. It's part of their thing. It's like the gym. They work it into life. You
but,
know?
I mean, can you imagine having to bring that up? Imagine being like a Wall Street trader going, "So, Rachel, tonight, can I shit on your chest?"
Absolutely. It's quietly coming. Well, the other thing I was thinking, too, is like, I'm just going to be honest. I have no desire to try heroin or poop sex, but I would want to do both very cleanly. If let's say I actually love a good shit on me. like, do you shower? shower a lot? Like, you gotta hit the showers, man. That's like, it has. So cleanliness has to be a considerable portion of this poopy regimen. Because as dirty as it gets, you gotta be. It's like, so are they into that? It's like the egg thing and the chicken. Like, are these guys, are they into really having a shower mean something? Or are they just, like, into, like, going potty somewhere they shouldn't?
Do you think it was that the shower started it then? That maybe, you know, they kind of thought, you know what, I like showering, but I want to take it to a whole new level of showering. This has got to really stand for something.
Right,
I really
never
need to clean
dirty.
Something off, man.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I don't get dirty enough. See, but I don't think... So, okay, so hold that thought. And then, but it, this is supposed to be sexual. So I don't think, well, I guess people do have dirty sex stuff too. I don't know. For me, it's like my boner is related to how attractive, I guess I'm old fashioned. You know, if somebody's attractive to me, I'm attracted to them. But for other people, it involves clothing and complication. That's what I would call poop sex.
Yeah. Complication.
I bet they have code words for it. I bet they don't just say, so, fancy shitting on me later. I bet they kind of like say...
Oh, shall we go to, you know, Brown University tonight?
Do you want to...
Oh, it's like, oh, so they're like always... in Does the eagle want to go to the alligator's cavern?
I would like to matriculate later.
Right. No, but I mean, for me, when I'm in a cool relationship that's been going for a while and the sex is good, you start to be really open about it. You're like, hey, you want to fuck in this bathroom? So I bet they're actually like, hey, I got a shit. You want to fuck?
I have this really cool new plexiglass table. Lay under it for a minute. I want to show you something.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so...
But that's clean poop sex. No contact. Come on.
Yeah.
Right. That's true. I met a girl once who I was about to start dating her, and then I quickly rescinded. But she was she had just started she met a woman, like a pretty girl that kind of hit on her in a bar, but wasn't really hitting on her, but was like, hey, I do sex work. I don't sleep with people. I work in this was in San Francisco. It was like a house. And you go there and you generally work topless, but it's not about sex. You do more kink acts for people. So a guy will come in before work and you put a leash on him and walk him in a circle. He drinks milk out of a bowl. And that was like, she was just telling me stories and it was just blowing my mind. I just can't. It's so insane that to mingle being a man cat and then going to a job. You know what I mean?
To be fair, Britain does have a man cat who's an MP.
Yeah.
George Galloway.
Seven? It came out?
Well, no, he did it on Big Brother. A guy called George Galloway, he did it on Big Brother. He was on a celebrity Big Brother. And part of the task was he had to pretend to be a cat. And
it was just deeply, weirdly sexual.
Yeah, he was wearing a leotard. And the actress Rula Lenska... fed him milk and talked to him as if he was a cat.
And it was just so...
It's fucking creepy.
And then the fact that he's still in politics, you know?
But he's like... in the respect... The party he's in is called the Respect Party. Which is amazing.
But that's the thing is you see him and you're just like, all I can think of is you being a good kitty.
But he's the one that gave that Senate committee a hard time.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he turned up for a Senate committee hearing and they were expecting him to be just as respectful as any kind of, you know, US politician was. And British politicians don't roll that way.
Right.
British politicians are rude and aggressive and just go, yeah, whatever, shut up,
but
listen to
me.
Yeah.
The press is equally not...
they're not respectful
of politicians.
Yeah, totally.
And so, it was kind of interesting. But, so in the UK, he's known as this bit of a joke who dressed up as a cat on Big Brother and was buddies with Saddam Hussein. Yeah. And in the States, he's known as a bit of a ball breaker who stood up for a Senate committee.
Well, I'll tell you a truth. I'm not a political person, but I'll tell you a truth about me. I had never voted, and I registered to vote so I could vote for Arnold Schwarzenegger as my governor because he's my favorite action hero. Because that's how little I actually care about politics. I know he might have closed some schools and I'm a horrible person, but I knew he was going to win in this ridiculous state anyway. And it felt like the most American thing I've ever done or heard of.
To vote for an Austrian.
To vote for an Austrian that is famous for playing an illiterate robot from the future that's a killing machine. He then went on to play a man that gets pregnant. That's,
with Danny DeVito and twins. And
I'm just saying, he is like, I don't know, I can't actually, the fact, so my dad used to take me and my dad actually got caught in a shootout once on the way to see Running Man when I was a little kid in New York City. And my dad took a ricochet bullet in the shoulder.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not even, and I got hit with little bits of shrapnel in the head. That's how much I love Arnold. But we used to go, I remember Terminator was coming out, and my dad lived in New York when it was still, had a lot of poor people. And we were on 2nd and 2nd, which was still pretty hood. And he had a loft there, and there was a Terminator poster in the subway, and he loved taking me to movies that I was not old enough to see yet. And he took me to see Terminator in Harlem. And in the middle of it, cops came in and tried to chase some guy with a briefcase. And this old lady offered me a banana that she was half eaten out of her bag. And it started a ritual for my dad and I. And we went to every Schwarzenegger movie on opening night throughout my childhood. And then we got caught in that shootout. And then I fell in love. And I voted for him because beautiful, and that's how America works.
So did you still go to see Running Man after the shooting?
Big shot.
So what happened, it's kind of a really cool story. The Jordan Air Jordan flight suits had just come out. It was a very expensive hip-hop item. They were red and black, and everybody wanted them. And there was a guy running towards my dad and I, and he was in a flight suit, and he had a duffel bag. So all I'm thinking about is, wow, that guy's got a flight suit, you know, and next thing you know, he runs in between. My dad and I weren't holding hands, but we were walking akimbo. And so he slices between the two of us and separates us. And then in front of us, like a white GTO, which is like a sportsy kind of car, pulls up and literally hits the wall. And so it's looks like it's parking in front of us. So we see just the drivers in front of us. And the guy leans out like in action movies. He gets out of the passenger side and leans his gun on the roof of the car and starts shooting at the guy in the flight suit who's behind my dad and I. And this it's about 40, 50 feet of space. So my dad just grabs me and pulls me behind a car. And the guys keep shooting, pull off. Then all these motorcycles go by shooting. And then my dad is like, come on, let's go to the movie. Let's go to the movie. Let's just go to the fucking movie. Let's go to the movie. We're going to the movie. We're going to the movie. So we start walking down the street, and we get there, and we see the line around the block, and we're going to wait in the line. And then my dad's like, I think I'm shot. And he looks under his shirt, and it's like instant. I don't know if you've ever seen a bullet. He was really lucky. The bullet actually hit him flat. So he had an instant purple, blue, gray, red fucking Rorschach painting on his shoulder, and it went all the way onto his chest. And then he looked at me, and my head was bleeding. And so we turned around and walked back down the street. By that time, there was an ambulance there, and we sat there. And I remember, too, because I was really little. I was in 7th grade, so I was like 12 or something, 13. And I was in the car, and I'd seen so many Schwarzenegger movies that I wouldn't tell the cops anything about the flight suit. And they were like... because oh man, this story is so good. I never tell the end of this. I always forget about it. So I just won't say shit. And my dad has to keep telling me that it's not like the movies, and the cop has to keep telling me that. So then they take my dad away for more questioning because I'm being so weird. And I shit not. And so I'm in this, and I got hit with little pieces of shrapnel that came off the bullet, but they didn't go through. They broke the skin slightly, so I was fine, and they just put a little shit on my head. So I'm sitting in there with this EMT, and he's trying to make me feel better. And he tells me this story that last week they had a woman, and there was a drive-by shooting. And this is why he was telling me, because he's telling me about the misdoings of gunplay. And there was a drive-by shooting, and they didn't know, but bullets went through the wall and killed an older woman while cooking. And she fell slumped forward, and they actually found her because she was on fire being cooked. on the stove. So my dad comes back from answering questions, and I'm even more paler than I was at the beginning of this trip to see the Running Man. And then he asked me, and I said, I tried to describe that the EMT tried to make me feel safe by telling me the story about the grandma cooking in her eggs, no less, or something. But anyway, so that's pretty much the extent of my closeness to Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's mostly on my end.
He knows only a little of it.
But whatever.
I can even imagine him at the adverts going, I will need your jacket, your boots, your motorcycle, and your support at the ballot.
Dude, the shit was like, you know, and then did you know he's the reason there's Hummers? He was the first guy to, like, make a street-legal Hummer. He's, like, the worst shit ever. But I still love him.
You voted for him.
Not all that. I have all his movies. I overdubbed all of Conan. Did you guys ever watch that?
I've seen Conan.
I overdubbed with Jell a bunch of years ago. We overdubbed all of Conan, the one with Will Chamberlain and Grace Jones. And we made you should watch it. They're on YouTube. We made Grace Jones, Chris Tucker, because he thinks it's a comedy club. Have you seen that, Conan?
No.
There's a cat growling. Sorry.
Has not seen Conan either. You guys should watch both Conans. I recommend the first one has a director's commentary, and Arnold is in it, and he's drunk. And that was what inspired me to overdub it, because he goes in and he...
That's a hissing cat. Yeah. Sky, calm the fuck down.
Fight!
I think Alti's got himself,
too. Yeah, I think Alti's got himself stuck. Yeah, I think I have seen the first Conan movie. I just don't think I've seen the overdubbed version.
That one's good. The first Conan is a better film. The second Conan is
the worst one is Red Sonja.
Hey, I liked Red Sonja.
There's that fantastic moment in Red Sonja where the two of them are in this kind of temple complex and they're kind of like planning what to do, and like one of them's like, you go there and you go there and then I'll... And they don't make a plan. They just go, and just run off. It's like they've not written the dialogue for this bit, this amazing plan. I mean, I may have remembered it wrong.
I think the days of like making a living off of being young and learning karate are over, but that kid really had a fucking run, man. Whatever his name was, because he had a sitcom. The kid who was the prince,
Ralph.
Yeah,
Macho.
Is it? No, no.
Not the karate
kid.
Not the Karate Kid.
Authentic. He was. I don't know. I swear to God, he had his own TV show, and then he got that, and that was his big thing. And then who was the? Oh, the woman was the bad guy, and she had that great candle room.
Yeah.
Love that candle room.
I do remember. I must point out to the listeners that if they're hearing this kind of sound like a creaking door, that's our eldest cat getting annoyed. It's not the candle room coming into our room. It's not entering our reality.
And it's also not the cat using a door.
No. If it was the cat using the door.
Or the sink. Or two turntables and a microphone.
Yeah.
I'll pay. I would pay. At this point, I'll pay money for my cat to learn one skill that's repeatable in front of company.
So I'm curious
then.
It's like
the cat that goes, no, 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 no.
Yeah, that's another famous cat on the internet. It's probably dead now.
Probably.
Yeah, they all are, aren't they, these famous internet
cats? He's so negative.
Yeah, man. I like to bring it down to the cat talk occasionally, just to balance it, because it's all up, isn't it? Cat talk, it's constantly up, and occasionally you have to leaven that with a little bit of darkness.
Oh no, I meant that the cat that only says no is probably dead because it was so negative.
Ah, right, okay. Well, you know, he brought darkness into the world with his no, 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 no,
no, no, no, no.
But maybe he was doing it in a positive way. Maybe somebody was saying, "Do you think we ought to legalize paedophilia?" And he was going, "No, no, 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 no."
Right, so he's like the good advice cat.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
He's a good cat. He's good. So I have to ask, did you then go... So you went to the ambulance and everything. So did you then go a few days later to see Running Man?
Yeah, we did. Oh, I'm sorry. I actually didn't
finish
that.
Still has never
seen it,
actually.
No, my dad... And it's pretty... I had a pretty shitty... That part of my childhood. There were good patches and shit, but the divorce was... one for the books. And I remember I had to call my mom and explain that I went out with dad and we got in a shootout.
I got shot
and
a little
it was
bit.
Like, it was so much more stressful than getting shot around. I gotta fucking say, with how intense my mom was in that era. And it was just, oh man, fuck. I still, my adult bones can remember my child bones bracing for mom dealing with, you know, and it doesn't even matter that I'm calling alive to deliver this information. It was just like instant end of the universe while still being the universe going on. Kind of nuts. So yeah, we went a few days later, and I gotta say, it's to this day one of my favorite films. Oh, he says my favorite Arnold line ever is Dynamo, one of the guys in Running Man, the gladiators, who's covered in light bulbs and shoots electricity. There's a great part where he's in a little go-kart chasing Arnold, and Arnold says, "Hey, light bulb! Hey, Christmas tree!" It's really great. Because I don't... Some of those lines, you know, like when he does, like, stick around in Predator, they wrote that. That's not him, you know, but maybe that one was him, like, improvising on the set, you know?
It's his...
I don't know, Arnold, just you got to get his attention. Just go with it. And he's like, hey, light bulb! From Christmas tree!
They're like, look, we've seen how Rutger did it in Blade Runner. He did that fantastic speech at the end. Come on, Arnold, now's your time.
Yeah, so I think he probably was channeling Blade Runner, that whole film.
Yeah, he's thinking in his head, it was, I've seen attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. But coming out of his mouth, it was, hey, light bulb, hey, Christmas
tree. And I think that he, you know, people don't give him credit, but he really was big on character study. You know, like when he did the movie where he got pregnant, he studied all the pregnant men. Yes. He's a real actor. All we do is take from Arnold. You know?
Maybe he needs a statue or something.
I'm sure that motherfucker's got plenty. Wait, I just saw he got like a library in Austria. They gave him
an Austrian library.
Somewhere on the internet.
Can he read?
No.
Did you say the library was somewhere on the internet?
He can only read pounds, like how much something weighs. That's the only thing he can take in. He understands LBS and then numeric things under 900.
Yeah. What did you think of Cloud Atlas, Arnold? It was quite heavy.
No, oh, so that's it. He can only learn a new number if he can lift it. So that's basically, and we're back to bodybuilding and the fit. It's a perfect circle.
Absolutely.
You know,
it's been about music.
That's what it is for the gym. That's how they learn more.
They learn by lifting.
And so if you can't lift, if I can't lift it, I don't fucking know. I wish I could use that excuse in life. Like, hey man, the IRS calls and they're like, wow, your taxes are wacky. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I can't lift that shit. It's all numbers to me.
On a completely unrelated but probably should have been mentioned, you know, musical note. I have a question. I actually have a question about it. No. What's with you and Ice Cube? Because you mentioned him several times back when he was hard, his Ice Cube's blood. What is with you and Ice Cube?
Ice Cube to me is part of the miracle of rap that has both led to, created, and forged the confusion that is me and all these other people who love rap. Basically, Ice Cube, the hardest rapper in the universe to me, he signified being aggressive, hard, violent, all of NWA. I gradually, over the course of my life, learned that what he acted like is what I fell in love with, but he was acting. So I was in love with what was projected to me. So it is about who I'm becoming as a rapper and what he is. So, you know, like if you've seen any of the recent movies that the Ice Cube has done, there's somewhere he's like talking to a fucking raccoon and there's like fat kids running around eating sugar, wiping their boogers on him. It is like, I expect him to grow up and go new places, but when you are the epitome, I mean, I don't even know if you guys can conceive of how much NWA changed the face of music. They weren't they the first band to go platinum with no video because they were banned on the radio and all this shit? And it's like, they were it, man. He was toughness. They made gangster rap. They did all this stuff. And then it just ends up that, you know, like they're all what they wrote. So it's interesting. So for me, he is huge for me in what I don't want to be and what I've always wanted to be. So he's like the ultimate paradigm for me. And I like to laugh and mock all my favorite people. George Washington, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Ice the Cube. He represents to me that rap is like, people like me really grew up on rap. And because I was a white boy and because I was not like, just because my older brother didn't rap, you know, I wasn't born into rap. Like, I didn't even know how you do it. I didn't know where it came from. So I really bought into every kind of rap group. You know, if these guys said they lived in a sewer, I was like, wow, that's crazy. They live in a sewer, you know? And, if these guys said they killed people, I believed them. I don't know what that is. And I don't think I've ever done that. So me talking about Ice Cube is defining my own line of, like, difference between what you manifest inside someone's head with music and then a mirage. Does that make sense?
Yes. We've had one relevant question.
Bam!
There you go. We could take that. So, we're coming up on the hour, so we need to draw things to a close, sadly, because I'm very much enjoying myself. But I was going to ask you, we'll bring it back to a kind of more something that you're actually doing at the moment. You've just done the Transgressive North release. I've got all these windows open, and I want to get the right name for the track. And, for God's sake, typical.
Waiting Song. Yeah, those guys are really beautiful. In fact, I have it written. I don't even know. They wrote me a letter. They sent me copies of the CDs. And, like, you sent me an email, and it was very nice. And I said yes, and now we're doing a Skype call. But you wouldn't believe some of the ways I get asked to do stuff by people. It's like, I wouldn't ever want to print and release it because it really does make me feel like shit, but, like, you owe everybody in this day and age, man. I get some of the weirdest emails written, like, to me over my head to the... It's just strange how people present collaboration, and I've always been good at that stuff. So these guys are the exact opposite of bad. They're, like, really beautiful people. They got in touch with me, and every step of the way, we've just become closer and closer, and, as I stated jokingly before, I'm not a political person. I believe in personal politics. I just won't go there with people. I think all governments are kind of a sham. I understand it's nice to have paved streets and clean water, but it's just not my bag. But I do really value cats and children and play and just whatever that is. So I feel like giving to kids and being involved in that is something that I can do completely and wholeheartedly. And also, it doesn't compromise anything I do with my art. Not that they're equivalent, but the same reason someone wouldn't want their song playing in a McDonald's ad. You know, you should be careful about, in a very different way, I think that what those kids endure in India, being Dalit children, it's just, not to be punny, but it's way heavier than my music or what my music is worth or can do. So, you know, it's like it was a complete honor. And then also this really, for me, because I don't do a lot of political music, it was a chance to really tread lightly with the best intentions and make something cool that was also not overtly Hallmark and sentimental, because I don't think any classic asking for help does much good these days for anyone who needs help. I think that the world is desensitized to Sally Struthers ads, you know. So I wanted to make something that was real for me and for the kids, and hopefully creates like a middle ground for the people that these songs are pointed at, which is not necessarily the kids. You know, we're asking for the generosity of all these music fans around the world, and it's pretty cool. And those guys are tremendous, man. I mean, you just, I don't meet a lot of people that are entirely generous, and you know, it's like everybody wants to like do a Kickstarter so they can reinvent the baseball with the MP3 inside of it. But these guys are like, no, we're going to do something really elaborate, involve a lot of people, put all our time and life energy into it. And it's for kids so that they have more than nothing, you know? And it's like, I think it's very commendable. It's the exact opposite of the way people describe modern people. Like, nobody has an attention span. Everybody uses 40 characters. And, you know, so it's very, I like it. It's a modern classic effort to be human and make some music.
And that's all you can hope for in the end, isn't it? That people
really
do the right thing.
Absolutely. I think so.
Yeah. And I will put links to all of these things, as ever, in the description of the podcast so that listeners can go and find out about stuff. I think that one's the everythingisnewproject.com, I believe, is where they will find everything about that. Which is a really, from what I've been reading about today, people like Yacht are involved, and Lucky Dragons. These are Lucky Dragons Estate.
I saw them in your email when you said.
Yeah, they've stayed at my house before.
Sort of mates with.
Luke, and I've known Luke for about 10 years now. So,
You know what? I met Luke, and he kind of did the thing that you did to me. I said something funny, and I don't remember what it was. And he was like, "Yeah, sure, man." But he was playing at a. I was actually recording with Tunde some early Nevermen stuff in New York, and we went to an opening, and he had done art there. I love their art. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go see him, and we saw him. And then I went up to him after, and I said, like, hey, we have some mutual friends and this, and then, and nice. And he was like, okay, all right.
I like Luke.
He's like that. Luke's very kind of,
whatever.
Yeah, he's quite kind of calm about everything. And then we'll ask you something in kind of all honesty. It's like, the last time I saw him was, he was playing a show in Liverpool, and we went up to see him. And we're talking about his setup and these all his little kind of programmed Max MSP patches. And I was like saying, you know, I was saying to him that I always feel a bit like I'm cheating because I use Ableton Live. And whenever I see him, I feel bad because I can see he's just made it all. And he said in all seriousness, you know, well, maybe I should. Do you think I should start using Ableton Live? You know, but I mean, you can never quite tell if he actually really meant it because he seemed really sincere, and as if it was an honest question as to whether he should. And I was like, no, you don't need to.
I feel you, man. One time I met Phil Elverum too, who I love them.
I've put Phil Elverum up at my house before in the past as well.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, he's
now what you need to do is just round out the set, and if Dose One does something, we've got a spare room. Yes, we put Dose One up at your house.
But I met him, and I love him. Memorized every Microphones album. They had only put out one Mount Erie record at the time, mm-hmm. and I had sent him quite a few cold call emails. That's my style. If I like someone's music, I find a way to just say hi and then send you a care package. And if we're soulmates, it works out down the line. If not, you know, whatever. So I sent him a really nice email a couple times. I was like, I love you. You're the best. And he would send her stuff. So then I finally meet him at a show. And I go up, and I can tell my energy is way out of whack. I'm way too excited. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know. It's the same thing with the Lucky Dragons. I'm like, I was in a good mood that day, and I can be too much. And so I was probably too much. And I meet him, and he's fucking just hella quiet. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, he's said more in the emails responding to my nice emails. This is weird. What's going on? I'm like flunking. And then I just walk away, and I get a beer, and I was talking to a friend. And I was like, I guess Phil doesn't like me, you know, and I'm like crushed, you know, or something. And then he comes up and taps me on the shoulder, and he's like, you know, if you're ever in Olympia, you can, you know, should get hit, you know, drop me a line. And he was like, so he was, Totally nice to me. I just didn't know how to do it. It's like exact same thing. Where
my fellow from story is we watched Spinal Tap twice. We watched it all the way through normally and then watched it all the way through with the director's commentary on.
Oh, that's amazing. And best scene that for me is always the Stonehenge. People want to argue. That scene makes me cry still every time I see it. That first shot of it and then when it hits the stage. Oh, so good, man.
I've got this really long version of it. I've got the work print on my Nexus that I've not watched yet, and it's like 8 hours long or something ridiculous. And it's
Have you ever heard the studio recording that inspired Spinal Tap?
Oh, the Trugs tape.
Yeah,
I have that on my iPod.
Yeah, the guy who, what I love is that the studio engineer knowingly kept the fucking reverb on them all. So they're like arguing with this nice reverb.
Yeah. So I got to put some fucking fairy dust on it.
What no, is do that it again.
One? Yeah, it's like no, you played it last time. Fucking play it again.
Oh, that shit is so good, man.
I think the only thing that's wrong with that is it's just so short. It finishes and you're like, oh, I wish that just went on forever.
Are you sure? I heard a really long one.
Is there a longer version? I've only got like a 13-minute version of it.
Maybe it was about 13. Maybe you're right. And then there was another one about the recording industry that I heard. That one was so funny. It was on the same website. It was on like a shitty demo website, which I can't find again.
Oh, man. There's all these sites that disappear. But I have this amazing thing, this pertaining to recording by J&H Productions. And it's this voice, this phone message this guy's left, and he's talking about booking shows at some place.
That's the one.
Yeah, yeah.
You got the same site. That's the one I was just talking about. That the music industry, where he's like, oh, we're pertaining to the music industry.
Pertaining to the contract for the show, for the Coliseum.
Yeah, man. It's like, so that says so much about the industry to me. You know, like, when I hear that shit, it's just like...
And it's so long. That's actually no. That one's only 13 minutes as well. I've always felt like that was like an hour.
Right, right. Like a laugher. You know, they had that when I first heard that one when I recorded my demo. It was in Cincinnati in a basement, and the guy said it was a rap studio. It was not. it was a basement, and it had what was once red carpeting, but was now like a mute pink. Right, all over everything, the walls, the floors, everywhere. And I can't even tell you how nervous I am. I paid for this with like my own money. I didn't even know what a studio, it was like, I was very virgin. And I still rap like I was 100 pounds heavier. Like I was always like this when I was repping and stuff. Like, and like lots of posturing, very little me in my tank at that point, lots of thought and brain, but I didn't cut loose ever. So anyway, I'm in this studio and I'm just trying to do vocal takes in this booth. And then all of a sudden I get like kind of a good one and I got into it and I got loud. And then all of a sudden I hear, and I look to my right and the carpet, it's a door. And next door is the garage full of Rottweilers. And so the guy says to me on the talkback, he says, yeah, man, you're going to have to keep it down, man, because them dogs, that's how that is. And I was like, are you kidding me, right? So then I ended up the rest of the session, I was actually paying money to record, you know, my dream in life, as long as I didn't get too loud to upset the Rottweilers. But on the other side of this wall of carpet. Pretty amazing. And that was all with Jay Rawls, who did all my first beats. And I remember him just looking at me like, I'm sorry, man. I don't know what to do.
Well, you know, all those awful little kind of studios have been swept away by modern recording stuff. You know,
yeah, so. Man. Ableton.
Yeah.
So that was I believe that was ADAT back in the day.
Yeah.
If I really want to date myself, I toured, my first big tours were pre-Euro and pre-MapQuest. Yeah. Sometimes I think about that and I can't even believe that it happened. Touring Europe pre-MapQuest was the worst thing ever invented. It was insane.
But there was this whole thing, I mean, because I remember playing in a band back in the again, it was kind of late 90s, and it was before sat-nav or whatever, and we'd just go off to play shows, and we wouldn't really have any idea where the venue was, and you'd just kind of find it.
Yeah.
Now you can't find your way to IKEA without the sat-nav.
Yeah, now, even places I go to every day, I put the sat-nav on there.
I know, it's so true. I had a friend visiting, and I love him, but bless his soul, he's a nerdy sort, and he's on a block that I know really motherfucking well, and he's insisting on using his iPhone to find another block that I also know well. And his iPhone is telling him that that block is behind us, when I know for a fact that unless that block has walked, that motherfucker's in front of us. So I actually had to sit on this corner with this grown man who's looking at this phone, and he's saying to me, it says it's behind us. And I'm like, I completely understand that your phone is telling you that that street is behind us, but I guarantee it will magically be in front of us. It was pretty amazing, though. I actually was like, wow, phones, man.
Well, you have to kind of, you know, I think there's too many of these kind of people that end up driving into rivers and stuff just following their sat-navs blindly. I think you have to kind of ignore it occasionally. And there's the moment when you go, no, it's wrong. I know where I'm going. Yeah.
Yeah. Last time I toured, too, I was torn. I was with a lot of very phone-oriented people. I like the phone. I like the Twitter. I like the, little sound apps and stuff. But I'm not all phone all the time. These guys were very phone. And every morning we'd get up in a new city, and they would immediately, before stepping off the bus and stumbling around the corner to see if there's shitty coffee or shitty breakfast, everybody would Yelp everything and look for, like, a one. And I was like, wow, man, you're supposed to, like, get lost in Pittsburgh when you're in Pittsburgh. So it was interesting. I was having a nostalgic moment, and I was thrust toward adventure, being surrounded by, how smart all these phones are getting.
It's the future.
It is.
But unfortunately, we do have to draw things to a close.
Amen. Total pleasure, Alex.
It's been fantastic.
And the cats.
Absolutely. And
all three of us.
I'll have to, in a year's time, I'll have to hit you up again and say, hey, Dose, come and chat, and we'll talk about things. And
that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, man. Cool. Okay, well, I guess that, as I said before, I'll put links to everything in the description of the podcast. All that's left to say now is a future library goodbye. Goodbye. Thank you for downloading this episode of Future Library. Future Library is brought to you by PetPiranha.com and is hosted by myself, Alex Bottom. The podcast is free, but if you do want to show your appreciation, feel free to go along to alexbottom.co.uk and click through to music, where you'll be able to find things that you can buy, or go to asmallglassghost.co.uk where you can buy my latest music. Episodes come out when I feel like it, mostly weekly. But that's it, so thank you for listening. Thank you.